Hi, I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County, and your host for Education Conversations, a discussion forum to share innovative and relevant thoughts, research, and ideas on education today, and to explore ways to help students thrive. Welcome to this episode of Education Conversations, the future of education and the role of education foundations. We are well aware that education is evolving, students are evolving, and our society is evolving as well. Today, significant challenges and opportunities exist in education, and as transformation happens, education foundations can play a vital role in developing a thriving educational ecosystem that seeks to reach each and every student so they thrive in school and after they graduate. Here in our community, the Education Foundation of Sarasota County certainly continues to evolve, developing new strategies to best prepare students for life and to support teachers now and in the future. Our guest today is David Moore, Dr. David Moore. David is the president of Moore Strategic Consulting, and his firm provides services to enhance strategic leadership, facilitation, and project oversight for nonprofits with a strong focus on education. And David brings over 20 years of experience, including roles as Senior Vice President, Programs at the National Academy Foundation, Partner at Collaborative Communications Group, and Chief Operating Officer for at the Forum for Youth Investment. In addition, he has served as Director for Community Initiatives at the Harwood Institute. And it will come as no surprise that David got his start working with education foundations, and through those experiences, it solidified his desire to work as a bridge between institutions, the community, and everyday life. So we are so honored that David is here today to share his perspective on education and the role of education foundations. David, welcome to Education Conversations.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. It's a real treat to get the chance to sit and have a conversation with you. That's a lovely introduction. I'm going to steal it. Better written than I write my own. So,
that's right. Well, we're fortunate to have you here with us. I want to start off, as we get into the topic of where education is going and everything, I want to get a little bit more information on what brought you to education, as you've devoted a lifetime to it. And I'm wondering, why does it matter to you? And my understanding is that your level of commitment may have been maybe inspired by your grandmother.
So without telling too long a story, it wasn't until I was an adult that I realized I'd been brought up with a certain spirit of care for others. And that came from my grandmother, who'd come over to the United States in 1912 as a six-year-old from Great Britain. There's all sorts of fascinating stories about my grandmother, but one of them is that she'd gotten married, was living on the farm outside of Cleveland, Ohio, and during World War II, would sit at night and listen to the Battle of Britain and literally worry about her relatives, her aunts and uncles and cousins still in London. But during the day, often around her kitchen table were German immigrants who lived in the bottoms, literally down at the river, who had came in for coffee and were welcomed at the dining table. And my uncle, her second child at the time, a gruff 14-year-old, got mad at his mother, my grandmother, and said, "Why do you let them in here?" And her response was, "Where else are they supposed to go?" I could tell you 10 stories like that, and they still choke me up. Because I realized that my mom, and by marriage, the man she married, brought that story of care for others into the household. And that's how we were raised. And we were expected to take what we had, money, talent, time, and do things with it to help other people. That's just how we were all raised, right? And we've all made different choices. And for me, long story made short, I thought I wanted to be a high school teacher. Social studies and history were my thing. I got all the way down and got certified and got through that path for lots of reasons. Realized I was probably going to get fired as a teacher because I didn't like the conditions of everyday life for high school teachers. I had a ton of respect for the teachers who navigated those conditions every day, but I wanted to change them. Because it wasn't the way it should have been organized. I could see the systems and the system challenges. And so that led to graduate school and public policy thinking and jobs that fed this desire to sort of operate on the boundaries of organizations, in particular schools and school and educational systems, where we could create change, where we could nudge at this institution and these systems that play a really fundamentally important role, but have the hard time sort of adapting, growing, shifting, and changing. Mm-hmm. And I was eager to be productive in that and not sit on the sideline and complain about it.
It's actually a really good story, and it's interesting how you've been able to successfully tie in system challenges to the concept of caring for others, and I think that's grounded in probably a mentality that it's not an us versus them, but it's everything you do is we. So thank you for sharing that, David. That's actually really insightful and something I did not know. In all these years, we have been working together for probably at least 7 years. And in that time, you and I have certainly seen a lot of changes in education, public education in Florida and certainly across the country. And as someone who is steeped in education as you are and been working with clients, not just us in Florida, but even nationally, what are you seeing as the biggest issues and maybe even the opportunities facing education?
Well, I've actually always believed that education is a reflection of what's happening in society, and schools reflect what's happening in kids' lives and in their families. People didn't want to talk to me in education policy school when I would argue schools aren't as important as you think they are. Schools actually reinforce what kids walk in the door with. I know it's not a favorite thing to say because a lot of people believe schools and education is how you change people's trajectories. And I don't disagree with the basic point. I know people whose education changed their lives. But more often than not, education reinforced the life they were already set on a path to have. And that goes both directions. Schools and education reinforce things that are in society. And so I think the transformations of our society in the last decade, from how we relate to each other, for how we acquire information, for how we share information, for how we feel about ourselves, are fundamentally at play in educational systems and structures. And those systems and structures were built in an era that didn't have those other things happening, right? So, you know, we have schools that were built when you had to go to school to have access to information. Right. You don't have to go to school to have access to information, right? My kids solve more problems with YouTube than they've ever learned how to solve at school. Like, I hate to say that. My kids go to great schools, but they just do. Mm-hmm. So what we need schools for, what we desperately need, educational structures that help people mature and grow and learn how to handle information and learn how to relate to people and learn how to, but the how well we can adapt current things versus grow new things, I think, is the fundamental question that shows up in all sorts of ways right now in education.
Do you think that you're seeing more pronounced changes currently than even in maybe the last 20 years? Have you seen it accelerate? Have you seen it fall short more? Like, where are you seeing the gap? Has the gap widened? Has the gap shrunk?
That's a great question. Think about, you know, how I want to address it. I think in some ways it's accelerated dramatically, and the numbers would bear this out. The growth in charter school population, the growth in homeschooling across the country, the innovations of micro schools and other sort of flexible models that were sort of in play but sort of got huge lifts during COVID. So dramatic, fast change in some ways, right? And the explosion of public investments and policies that support that, if you want to call it fragmentation, I think mm-hmm. that's the right word, segmentation, from educational saving accounts, vouchers, if you want to call them, or whatever you want to name them, tax credits. Those policies reinforce the fragmentation that I think was coming anyway mm-hmm. and has its roots in magnet schools. And if you go all the way back to the civil rights era, the explosion of private all-white academies in the South as a counterbalance to integration. And I guess that last point leads me to, yes, there's been this accelerated change, but it's also revisiting some of the longstanding historic challenges, mm-hmm. which are the people who are best able to access mm-hmm. the flexibility, the innovation, the creativity, are those with the means to do so.
So it seems as though, from my own perspective, I agree with you, and seeing the, the demand of which families are wanting to see more personalized options and choice and all of that has certainly has vocalized stronger. And COVID, I think, certainly accelerated all of that. Given that you have background in addressing system challenges, are you seeing that the pain points are trying to make that system change? And so then how does one make those changes? Because I think it boils down to what I'm seeing again. I'm kind of sitting on the, maybe in the balcony watching down, that there's folks who are very much in support of education reformation. And then there's other folks that are sitting there feeling as though the changes are protecting the preservation of public schools and the fear that any of these options that are coming forward may dismantle, disrupt, and destroy public education as we know it. How do you unpack that? How do we communicate that to our community so that there's not such a division of perceptions or perspectives, maybe?
Right. So a couple observations that I would add to yours. First of all, the sort of romantic idea of public education as this all accepting, serving everyone, publicly available good, you know, is always been a myth. Public schools have never been as open, welcoming, and serving for all that at times in my life, I've been the romantic about sort of the John Dewey notion of public schooling. But that's never been true. We've never really lived all the way up to that as a country. And so the other truth that I've experienced in systems is we actually build big public systems to not change. And that's actually for a good reason. Mm-hmm. Like, they're stable. Like, there are certain things that stability help our communities have anchors and stay put and sort of serve generations of people, right? So the system's actually designed not to change. Mm-hmm. And I think we beat it up for not changing when, in fact, you know, it's partly designed to be small C conservative, to be slow at change. Mm-hmm. The problem is when the world around it needs something so radically different so quickly, that push point is really hard. Mm-hmm. And I think parents were already feeling that as they thought about their kids' lives and how they evolved and developed. But COVID sort of exposed it in much deeper ways. Parents were sitting at home with their young people, listening to the class and seeing the chaos of the teachers and starting to wonder, is this really the best way to do this? What have we got wrong here? What's right? While respecting and honoring the great work that dedicated adults did in that context, it also caused questions to come into lots of families' minds. And you and I both know lots of families who have a kid, or I've got two stepsons, and one of them has never been well served by public schools. Mm-hmm. And this is a family with all the resources in the world to help that kid out, and he still doesn't succeed at school. So all of that swirling together in an environment where we need schools to do something different is, I think, accelerating the pressure points. And the system itself, there are pockets, I think, that are emerging of system leaders who say, yeah, that's right, and we can do this differently. Mm-hmm. But they're few and far apart, and it's not clear that the larger environment they're asked to operate in gives them room to do this. And one quick sort of piece of this is in the state of Florida and in lots of other states, charter schools and schools that take students with a educational savings account have hardly any regulations on them. At the same time, the public schools and school superintendents play this all day long. I have a laundry list of requirements that I have to meet that are in state statute. And I don't have flexibility on those things. And I have to spend money on those things. And students are going to other places where you don't put the same expectations on them. And that's a very strong imbalance in the equation. And I think the existing public school system is right to say, give us the same flexibility. Now, I would also say there are plenty of cases where that flexibility has been given and those systems don't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's going to be a combination of context and leadership that starts to capture this in communities, I think.
So that ties me into a good follow-up question, because I think solutions to these types of problems will not be easy and certainly will require a multi-pronged approach. Before we move into the role of education foundations, what are some of the broader developments you're seeing emerge to address some of these challenges?
Well, I think there's a great article recently that used the phrase unbundling, mm-hmm. right? That we're starting to sort of pull apart education into parts and pieces. And there's another phrase that's getting used, which is called the assembly of education, mm-hmm. right? How do we assemble mm-hmm. education? And what's always been true is that people with lots of money have always assembled education from go to this school for these things, go to these sports teams, go to these rec clubs, go to these music lessons. Like, so how do we actually build structures that let more people more equitably access all that kind of assembly of parts and pieces? And what does it mean to unbundle? So one simple thing is, like, could a school district today tell you what the cost per student per algebra class is? Mm-hmm. Like, because that's what it's going to require, mm-hmm. that we sort of can unbundle the pieces and reassemble them in different mixed matches. And I think they're going to be, we're going to need intermediaries. We're going to need groups in communities who can help families and organizations create those connections for folks.
Are you seeing any success stories yet nationally that are moving into that unbundling and assemblage?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are well-known charter networks, the big picture company and those high schools. I think there are pockets of school districts with innovations like this. There's some great work in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that matches this from a district level. There are some states innovating with going to competency-based diplomas instead of seat time diplomas. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a fundamental requirement for this, is let's stop counting attendance, mm-hmm. as how you get a diploma, and count, you know, can you show me you did something? So I think there's parts and pieces are showing up with success.
So how do you then balance the creativity and opportunity that is there and the pragmatism that probably needs to be deployed for the being realistic with what some of the barriers or the system challenges that might be there? How should we approach it?
Well, first and foremost, we got to find a way to have conversations that aren't so fraught with, what's the word I want to use, sense of victimness, mm-hmm. How I've been harmed by something, or how it might be harming my children. And I hear that on all sides of the continuum, but there's this notion. So we've got to have different conversations about what it means to learn and what we need schools for. I mean, look, we still need schools to be childcare. Like, the economy doesn't work if kids don't go somewhere during the day while their parents work. Like, we're not going to have a bunch of six-year-olds sitting at home with Zoom without parents, and we need parents at work to have an... Like, so right. There are some practical realities to why schools are still really important, mm-hmm. to a larger societal infrastructure. We still need places for young people to gather with people who aren't like them. Mm-hmm. I mean, my brother homeschools his children, and they do homeschooling in a cooperative, partly because they want their kids to have social time with other kids, like, right. By design, right? So we got to have those conversations. And we're not really in the moment in most of our communities in an environment where that conversation is ready to be had. I think we're finding places where people are starting to figure out, okay, let's get back to some fundamentals and build this in a way that's equitable. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the folks at Education Reimagined, a national nonprofit, are really saying, this is coming, and we have to be intentional about it, and we have to do it in a way that's for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that should be possible. So let's actually talk about that, not some of these other distractions right in the conversation. And so I think it's going to take some time, but we're going to have to figure out how to do that.
I think you're tying into the things that the Education Foundation here in Sarasota County cares about, and even why we started this Education Conversations podcast, because we do agree what your own observation is that there are many strong vested stakeholders that have deep values and thoughts and opinions on what education should do either for their child or for our community. So bringing them all together in a respectful way, again, I agree. That's going to take a lot of work and a lot of time, but it is necessary to do that. So let me bring it back then to the efficacy of just the role of local education foundations and how they're different. And you work with several different ones, not only, again, in Florida, but across the nation. You were involved in a research project that talked about the mixed program portfolios and the impact that they make. Can you share kind of what you learned from that research project?
Yeah, so what we learned in the Florida project, but it echoed across the other places I've worked and spent time, and whether they have the name foundation in them or not, they're these educational organizations that sort of sit in a connective place. You know, we need organizations that are doing real work every day with students or teachers, something meaningful, whether it's mentoring programs like Take Stock or direct student support programs like you all do here, with And that work, the work of the direct student work, is what gives them sort of tangible on-the-ground experience, exposure, and credibility, but also leverages their relationships into conversations with other folks who do student-facing work, the schools themselves, Boys and Girls Clubs, all the other players in town, to say, look, how do we sort of talk together about what we're learning and what could be different? And how can we try something new? Like, I think one of the most powerful things that we learned in the research is that doing, you know, on the ground work gives organizations the capacity and skill to then try out interesting new things, right? So one of the things the education foundations in Florida have often talked about is, you know, education foundations can actually give school districts cover. They can take a risk a school district can't. Like, oh, there's a cool, interesting program. Let's let the education foundation help pilot it. And let's figure out if it matters. Let's collect data on it. And then the school district can learn as a partner without having to, you know, take tax dollars to go implement a brand new program that's never been tested in their community, right? So I think it's the combination of direct work, sitting in a small, nimble way to be innovative and creative because you're not managing a big behemoth, mm-hmm. and being connected to the other organizations in town. The work you all do with Planet and other education foundations do with local college access networks or other collective impact style efforts are really fundamental. There are a number of communities where I work where the organization that does that work, that puts people on the table, is actually the only one in town doing it. And they're often looked at as the only one who could do it. They're actually neutral enough, they're trusted, they have actual credibility. If a community doesn't have that, it's actually behind. Like, I go into communities and if I can't find that organization, we have to start to talk about how to build that organization. Because you need that sort of in-between bridge, doer, innovator, convener, mm-hmm. to pull this kind of stuff off, to change things.
Yeah, and that is certainly a place that we strive. Let me just say that. It's a continuous improvement, innovation and all of these things and pulling in partners. And it's not easy work. And I think what I've learned in our time is collective impact is probably the most complex work of all, because it's a long game, and a lot of time the impact and the progress that you make, you see it very incrementally along the way.
And it's hard to raise money for because people can't see immediate return for the value, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very different conversation with donors and others to sort of see the value of it. You've been lucky to have partners in town who see the value in it, and so, but it's a struggle every day for folks.
Yeah, for sure. So moving forward, how can education foundations better support students and teachers?
Well, I think they've got to do the two things they've always done. Just they're going to have to do it in new ways. And one is be a direct support link. Mm-hmm. Like, you need a mentor, we'll find you one. You're short on supplies in your classroom, let us help. You need access to good PD, we've got a leverage point with the district to marry up and get good PD, right? So you've got to be relevant right now to the realities of those folks. And nobody else is helping them think about and or operating on their behalf with their interests in mind towards what comes next. So who's the person who's saying, look, how do we shift, change, adjust in a way that meets the best interests of all the students, that sort of preserves and protects the important value of teachers as meaningful adults in young people's lives while we build something new? I think those are really important roles, and they take really skilled leadership and nimble capacity of staff and boards and volunteers to keep it going. But that's exactly what's needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for your time today. You always provide such great insights. And I hope, listeners, you have enjoyed listening in on this discussion. I think, David, you provide such valuable service to us and certainly to other education foundations. And for everything you do to help students and the next generation to thrive, thank you for sharing your time with us. Listeners, I hope that you have learned more about the role that education foundations serve in our community today, what collective impact is happening across different communities, and certainly how education has changed and why we need to continue to invest in our next generation of leaders. To learn more about our resources and the programs that we have available here at the Education Foundation of Sarasota County, I encourage you to visit us at our website at www.edfoundationsrq.org. And thanks for listening to today's podcast, and be sure to tune in to our other episodes of Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County. Mm-hmm.